You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It may be snowing in Houston, but the Rockets were making it rain in Utah. Apologies for the cheesiness of that, but had to use the line since Craig Ackerman took it from me on Twitter during the broadcast last night. Welcome back, everybody, to Locked on Rockets, the home for daily post-game commentary on your Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. As we chat early on this Friday, well, of course it's a fun Friday in Houston, given that it's the first measurable snowfall in over 8 years here, but it's a fun morning because the Rockets, well, they won again, 112-101 in Utah. It's the 8th consecutive win for the Rockets, all since the return of Chris Paul. It's their 14th in the last 15 games. They're now 19-4 on the year, obvious number one seed in the Western Conference. Folks, right now, this team is a juggernaut, and it's fun to get to see it again because we've known it for a while, but the Rockets, before last night, had only played one game in the past 8 days. So it's great to get back to an actual regular routine of watching basketball. Starting last night, they wrap up the road trip Saturday night in Portland, and then they're home for 7 games before Christmas. Pretty sure they'll be favored in all of them. So there's an opportunity for the Rockets to run this streak out for quite a while, assuming they continue to play at the level that we've seen, not just recently, but I would say this entire year, because 19-4 doesn't lie. This team right now is an absolute juggernaut. So, of course, today's show, we're going to have a brief post-game recap, looking at the primary themes through our usual three-point style, what we can take out of that game last night, what we learned from it, and it was a good game all the way around. It wasn't even as close as the final score would indicate. Again, 112-101 was the final. That's because the Jazz, led by Donovan Mitchell, rookie guard, had 26 points. A lot of those came in garbage time. Give them credit for not quitting. From the standpoint of being a Rockets fan, folks, the Rockets were up 25 late in the third. This one was all garbage time. Never got to single digits in the fourth quarter. The Rockets controlled this game when it mattered. 37-20, outscoring Utah in the third quarter. James Harden led the way with 29 points. Chris Paul was one rebound away from having a good game. Kidding, of course. Had 18 points, 13 assists, 9 rebounds. Oh, so close to the Russell Westbrook stat stuffer special. And then, of course, the real story, Ryan Anderson, 23 points, 9 of 11 from the field, including 5 of 6 from behind the arc. So as we get into our 3 points recap, I'm going to actually start there with Ryan Anderson, because as great as Chris Paul and James Harden were, we tend to expect that from them. And I would say both of them, while good, it wasn't anything transcendent. For Ryan Anderson to not just score 23 points, but do it on the volume to where he has 9 of 11 from the field, 5 of 6 from behind the arc, also had 6 rebounds. This was a big boy game for Ryan. Remember, 3 nights before, he left early in the Lakers game, only played 12 minutes because of back spasms, and he was questionable as recently as 24 hours before the game. So it wasn't even sure that he was going to be healthy enough to play. And not only did he play, he was probably the Rockets' most impactful player, plus 12 in his 35 minutes, and 35 minutes that consisted often of banging down low against the likes of Derek Favors. So it was a very huge game for the Rockets to have Ryan step up. And again, it's always nice when he makes his shots, but what was especially unique about this was how it forced the Jazz out of their traditional style. When you think of the Jazz, and this is a quality win, by the way. The Jazz entered the game, they had won 6 of their last 7, they had the third best point differential, trailing only the Rockets and the Warriors in the Western Conference, and they were playing at home on national TV. So it's a tough game, and I would say that Quinn Snyder is as good of an X's and O's coach as there is in the NBA. And when you think about what the Jazz do, to me it comes down to coaching and toughness. Those are the two things that I think of when I first hear Utah Jazz. And from the toughness standpoint, it starts with those two bigs down low, Rudy Gobert and Derek Favors, the way they often play volleyball on the glass. And there have been times the last couple of years against the Rockets where it felt like the Rockets were ill-equipped to deal with that. And the Jazz won by simply out-physicaling them. And in this one, it just wasn't an option. Ryan was so efficient. The stat of the game to me, and it was just staggering, was the Rockets outscored the Jazz 27-10 with Gobert and Favors in the game together. And it's staggering from the standpoint of, yeah, a 17-point margin. That's more than the 11-point margin the Rockets actually ended up winning by. So certainly that was a determining factor in the game. But beyond that, it shows you just how little the Jazz were able to play those two together. That 27-10, that was it as far as the time that those two played together, even though they each played, I believe, about 28 minutes for Gobert and 28 minutes for Favors. So it shows you just how quickly Quinn Snyder, again, one of the best X's and O's guys in the NBA, realized that even though that's kind of their identity, it just was not even an option against the Rockets. And it always helps that Ryan makes his shots. Certainly, there have been stretches that, you know, if he goes out and he misses some of those shots, maybe we're talking a different story here. But beyond that, I think it speaks to the increased layers of the Rockets this year and their ability to match up with the competition no matter how they want to play. And for a large part of this year, we've talked about the versatility of the Rockets and their ability to match up with other teams who want to play small. And we've done this in the context of the Warriors, their death lineup with Draymond Green at the three, because now the Rockets can counter that with what they call the tuck wagon lineups, which we saw a little bit against the Jazz. They're only, even though Nene was out with a scratched cornea, Clint Capella only played a little over 17 minutes, largely due to foul trouble, and Tarik Black played 9 off the bench. There were a lot of times the Rockets were actually playing with either Ryan or PJ at the 5 in this game, so we saw that from time to time on Thursday. But in general, throughout the year, we've seen these tuck wagon lineups, that's what the Rockets like to call them, be sort of a revelation, because you throw in Tucker, Bamute, let's also throw in Chris Paul, because he's a perennial first-team all-defense player, all your new toys, and the Rockets are able to match up against smaller teams in a way they couldn't a year ago. Now, it's not that the Rockets couldn't play small last year. You could play 3 or even 4 out of Pat Beverly, James Harden, Eric Gordon, Lou Williams in the playoffs. It's just that you defensively gave up a lot when you did that. Now the Rockets are able to play smaller and not give up as much defensively, if anything, based on the versatility of those guys like Tucker, Bamute, and even, to a lesser extent, Chris Paul. So there's been a lot discussed there, and justifiably so. But the flip side, and I think what Thursday showed you, the Rockets are pretty capable of matching up if you want to go big as well. Because Ryan Anderson essentially shot the Jazz out of their preferred lineup, out of what they want to do, which is just grind it to a halt. The Jazz want the blueprint for the Jazz against the Rockets, they want to do what Memphis did early in the season, which is muck it up. And I think we saw especially that last game against Memphis, which I believe was after Chris Paul's return, the Grizzlies were nowhere near as effective at that as they were early in the season. And I think the return of Chris Paul, in addition to, you know, the obvious Ryan Anderson, had something to do with that. And the Jazz tried to do the same blueprint. It did not work at all. Again, 27-10, the Rockets outscored the Jazz with Gobert and Favors in the game to the point where the Jazz didn't even find it worthy of trying. And you might ask, what's new? Because certainly Ryan's a stretch four, and he was in Houston last year, and I know a lot of you are wondering, well, what's different? You know, this is great, but how much is it going to translate in the playoffs? What's going to be different about 2018 than 2017? Here's what's different for me. It's the synergy between Ryan Anderson and Chris Paul. That, to me, makes Ryan as a stretch four even more lethal in this offense than he was a year ago. Because, folks, I'll draw you a contrast. In the playoffs last year, the Spurs, on paper, should not have been able to play that Twin Tower lineup of LaMarcus Aldridge and Pau Gasol as much as they did. On paper, it seemed pretty easy that you could just, whichever of them was going to guard Ryan Anderson, you could get it to Ryan and he could shoot over the top, and eventually they would have to go smaller to match up, and the Spurs then wouldn't have as much length, wouldn't have as much success on the glass. It didn't really play out that way. And to a small extent, it just comes down to Ryan missed some shots that I'm sure he thinks he should have made. But beyond that, I don't think the quality of looks was quite that great, especially compared to what we're seeing Ryan get with Chris Paul now. And I saw a stat from Jonathan Fagan in the Chronicle last night. Ryan is now making 73.9%, essentially 74% of his threes on passes from Chris Paul, which is just a laughable, just a staggering figure there. But where I think this makes a difference, it's sort of twofold. I think it's not as simple as it sounds on paper to just put in a stretch four and then all of a sudden the other team is just going to refuse to come out. Because, folks, this is the NBA. These guys are professionals. Even guys that we consider somewhat unathletic for the four or five spot, they can come out to the perimeter and stand within 5 or 6 feet of Ryan Anderson enough to at least get a hand in his face and contest if need be. It's not rocket science, and it's not like Ryan is such a super athlete that they just can't chase him. It's not that impossible. Where the Rockets can really take advantage of Brian Anderson, essentially what you want is confusion. Maybe it's a direct pick and pop, or maybe it's the initial action takes place somewhere else on the floor, on the other side, and maybe there's a cut, maybe there's a back screen, maybe it's whoever's, you know, James, Chris, whoever it may be, driving to the rim and someone feels compelled to hedge. But what you want, essentially, is the uncertainty. You want whoever that guy is that's picking up Brian Anderson to not be certain of what his assignment is, to feel like he may need to help elsewhere. You create confusion, you create havoc, and then when you do that, what you're counting on is that that big is not going to be athletic enough to then recover and get back out to the perimeter and contest against Brian Anderson. And again, it sounds not that complex to do, but in terms of execution, it can be. And sometimes last year, the Rockets got very predictable in terms of how they're offense initiated, I would say, especially against the Spurs in the playoffs, to where, you know, on occasion, maybe Pat Beverly was having a good night and he could create, but by and large, it was James Harden, and it was all James Harden. And it became where the Spurs, and I would say other teams that like to play big as well, they were very secure in what their responsibilities were, and it was not as difficult as it might seem for them to stay close enough to Ryan Anderson for him not to get just this great quality of looks. Well, now that you have a more diverse offensive attack, especially in the minutes when you have both James Harden and Chris Paul out there, it becomes very confusing because, folks, Chris Paul, his attack is surgical. There is just a level of precision that we have not seen to this Rockets offense. There's also, as I said, the diversity based on it can, you know, you can start with James, you can start with Chris. You have to respect every inch of the floor in the half-court sets in a way that even last year you didn't have to do. And so that makes it all the more difficult to match up with Ryan. The other thing that I would throw out there with the addition of Chris Paul, what it means, even when it's just Chris and not James, there's a level of precision with Chris Paul that is just off the charts. And I think that plays really well with Ryan Anderson. I think both Chris and James are elite as far as their vision. Where I would say that Chris is even better than James is at the execution of his passes. James is really good. If I judge James by his vision, I'd give him an A+, and by the execution of his passes, I'd give him either a B+ or an A-. In that sometimes, you know, he sees it there, maybe he doesn't anticipate the defender quite as well, maybe the pass is a tiny bit low or high. I would give Chris an A+ in both, not just the vision, but the execution as well. And what I mean by that is he gets it to the shooters in rhythm. There is no wasted motion. He gets it to Ryan where he can rise and fire immediately. And when you're in a half-court set, when you're talking about a stretch four, that, you know, even just a half second to gather yourself, or in this case, a half second that you save, that can be all the difference between is your look clean enough to get a really good chance of it going in. And so I think that added, it's a combination of the added diversity from the standpoint of you can have both Chris and James creating now. It's the offense is less predictable in terms of how it's going to initiate. And also I think with Chris, there's just a laser-like precision that even with James a year ago, it was not quite to that level. So because of those factors, yes, Ryan Anderson was a stretch four last year. In theory, this is a game where you think that, hey, a stretch four could do really well. You pull the Jazz out of their preferred lineups. But even last year, as evidenced by Aldridge and Gasol in the playoffs, it did not always play out that way. Thursday night, it did, and I don't think it's the first time. I think it happened the last Memphis game. I think we'll get to see next week when the Spurs come to town. I'm sure the Spurs will try those Aldridge-Gasol lineups again, and I think there's a good shot it could work then as well. So, to me, yes, Ryan Anderson has been here a year, but this year, Ryan Anderson feels like even more of a threat than he was a year ago, and I think it's directly tied to the additional layers of Mike D'Antoni's offense that the Rockets are now able to install with Chris Paul in place. So to me, that was my biggest takeaway from this one, which is, you know, yes, Ryan had a great game, 23 points, 9 of 11 shooting. But to me, what was really telling about it was that the Rockets were able to match up even when the Jazz wanted to play big. We've talked so much throughout the year about the Rockets being able to match up when teams go small, which is something that they kind of struggled with in the playoffs last year. Sure, the Rockets could play small because they had a lot of guards they trusted, but they couldn't necessarily match up defensively. They gave something up when they went that route. Now, we know the Rockets can play small. The question is, well, what's going to happen when they play big, or when if they need to play big? And in this case, the Rockets went against one of the bigger teams in the NBA, certainly one of the bigger front lines, and they didn't just succeed. They thrived. They forced the Jazz out of that lineup, based in large part based on the success that Ryan Anderson had. And sure, making shots is part of it, but I think also it reflects just how many additional layers there are to this offense. And even though it took a while for the offense to fully get going, by the third quarter again, 37-20, and the Rockets were off and running, up 25 late in the third, and this was never in doubt when it mattered in the second half. Now, Ryan was my point one to our 3 points recap segment. Point two, I can't believe I've gotten this far without talking about the defense. Because, folks, the Rockets in this game, it was not easy. They, in the first half, the Jazz were competitive, and the Rockets, it felt like they were very uncertain. Now, they got going later on. The Rockets did have Ryan Anderson shooting well in the first half, but both Chris and especially James looked a little tentative in the first half to me. Now, they figured it out. They made some good adjustments at the half. Credit Mike D'Antoni. It felt like the Jazz were overplaying a lot on the perimeter, so in the second half, you saw a little more attacking. James going to the rim, Chris off the dribble and making some things happen in the mid-range game, and the Rockets were able to exploit how much the Jazz were overplaying. But in the first half, you know, Quinn Snyder is, as I said, one of the best X's and O's coaches in the NBA. And for the first time, the Rockets took a punch. The one thing about this streak, not only have the Rockets won 8 in a row, 14-15, they barely played any close games at all. So you want to see what happens when there's some pressure, when the other team forces you to get out of your comfort zone a little bit. And to a small extent, the Jazz did that in the first half. Give them credit for that. As I said, I think Quinn Snyder is a really good tactician as far as an NBA coach. But what kept the Rockets afloat, what may have impressed me most, even though the Rockets were a little out of sorts offensively, there's a little too much dribbling, they weren't quite sure how they wanted to attack, at the same time, they were still up 5 at the break, which puts you on pace to win by 10 on the road, because they held the Jazz to 46 points. And, you know, I know the Jazz finished with 101, but folks, that's misleading, because the Jazz put up crazy points in garbage time, I believe 35 points in the fourth quarter of that game. When it mattered, the Rockets held the Jazz to 66. Let me confirm that. Yes, 66 points in the first three quarters, including just 20 in the first and third. And we've given a lot of credit throughout the year to, you know, Luke Bamute, P.J. Tucker, Chris Paul, because they're the new toys. They're the guys who were brought in to improve the defensive profile of this team. But I would throw Trevor Ariza in there as well, because Donovan Mitchell for the Jazz, that's a really promising young player. I can't believe he fell to them, and that's going to make the Jazz bounce back a lot quicker from the loss of Gordon Hayward than you might otherwise think. But I would give Trevor Ariza, the old mainstay, credit, because they put him on Mitchell, and yeah, he got going late, but generally the first three quarters, Mitchell was inefficient, his plus-minus was not good at all, and it felt like that the Jazz just did not have any real avenue to consistently attack. I also give, even though it was limited minutes, I give Clint Capela some credit. This is not a game where you would think that Clint Capela, again, only played 17 minutes due to fouls, 7 points, 8 rebounds, due to 5 fouls in those 17 minutes. And so it's not a game where you look and say, Clint Capela put his fingerprints on this game. But in those 17 minutes, especially in the first half, I thought he did a really good job of battling. I thought this was sort of a man's game. And in past years, this is one where you worry about Clint. Is he strong enough? Is he tough enough to hold up? And it wasn't just that the Rockets got the Jazz out of their big lineups, because as we said, they outscored 27-10, the Jazz, with Rudy Gobert and Derek Favors on the floor together. Even when they did play, the Jazz, and even when they played alone, the Jazz were not able to get points at the rim. They only combined Favors and Gobert for 11 points, even though each played like 28 minutes. And I think that reflects the level of rim protection, especially when Clint was in the game early. I thought that he did a great job. He eventually got in foul trouble because he helped a little too much on penetrating guards, but against Gobert inside, I thought he did a really good job of contesting without fouling. There were a couple of strips early when it seemed like the Jazz were trying to establish the paint that Clint did not let it happen, and I think if you look at the rebounding totals, 8 in 17 minutes is pretty damn strong. If he plays starters minutes, you know, extrapolate that out, that's 16 rebounds in 34 minutes. And even though it was limited minutes, I thought they were important, especially in the first half, from the standpoint of setting a tone. Because, you know, yes, you had Trevor Ariza to throw on Donovan Mitchell, and that helped keep the Jazz out of their comfort zone. You were able to, both Harden and Chris Paul, I thought, were pretty good. Their length bothered Ricky Rubio on the perimeter. But you expect the Rockets, with all the options they have, to be okay on the perimeter. Where you worry about them in a matchup like this is, are they going to get out-toughed? And in the first half, with the Rockets struggling offensively, it would have been very easy to see the Jazz actually getting a lead based on having a lot of success near the rim. And they didn't, part of it now, I mentioned Ryan's rebounding totals either. I thought Ryan battled well on the glass. But let's also give some credit to Clint Capela, because I thought his toughness inside, even in limited minutes, I thought early on when the Rockets were sluggish, that was instrumental in the Jazz not being able to get out and build a lead. Capela went out there. He battled hard against Rudy Gobert. He competed on the glass. He did not shy away from the contact. They didn't score much inside at all. As I said, 11 points combined between Favors and Gobert. And I thought that was big in setting a tone, because this was the kind of game, in my opinion, when the Rockets were struggling early, if the Jazz had gotten off to a 5 or 10 point lead, all of a sudden, it might have been a very different game in the second half, because you have the crowd starting to believe, the Jazz, you know, there's just a certain level of confidence out there, and maybe you make the Rockets, a team that hasn't been tested very much this year, doubt themselves. The flip side is that, as it turned out, the Rockets, even not playing that well, they were still up 5 at the half, because even with the offense uncertain, even with all the adjustments that the Jazz made, the Rockets were still good enough defensively that even when they probably had a C-level game offensively in the first half, their defense was enough that they were still winning just by grinding, just by their grit and their effort. And so I think that was, you know, optimistic for the Rockets. You're still winning, and it's just a matter of, well, when the offense starts clicking, imagine what's going to happen. And of course, well, it did. Within a few minutes in the third quarter, the lead went from 5 to 25 as the Rockets just poured it on, led by Chris Paul and James Harden, who had a combined 47 points. But for the Jazz, it's demoralizing, thinking, boy, we did exactly what we wanted to do in terms of our defense in the first half. Maybe you could have defended against Ryan Anderson a little better, but by and large, the Jazz, I would say, played an A-plus first half from a defensive perspective, and they were still losing the game because of just how dialed in the Rockets were on that side. So again, it's a game, when if you just look at the final score, 112-101, you might not see it as a particularly impressive defensive game. But when you factor in when the game actually mattered, the first three quarters, holding the Jazz to 66 points in three quarters, holding them to 46 in the first half, to the point where the Rockets had a 5-point lead at the half, even though they were not playing that crisp on the offensive end, I think that's, beyond just quality defensive execution, I think that's just very demoralizing for the Jazz, and I think, you know, it's a team effort. Certainly, Luke Bamute, P.J. Tucker, they brought their usual energy off the bench, but the starters, Ariza, James Harden, Chris Paul, I thought everyone was just very sound in their assignments. They had a few days off before, hadn't played since Sunday, so I thought the Rockets looked, especially defensively, very certain of what their responsibilities were, thought they were dialed in throughout. And then even in limited minutes, I thought it was an encouraging game for Clint Capela, because if there's one weakness you worry about against a game, with the Rockets against a team like Utah, it's, oh no, is this one of those games where the Rockets get just grinded to death? And as it turned out, the Rockets were actually the grinding team, not the Jazz. And even though Clint didn't play that many minutes, I give Clint credit in the first half. I thought he set a tone, and I thought the way he did not back down against those two bigs was important in the Rockets kind of, again, just getting through that first half with the lead before eventually the offense started going in the third quarter and the Rockets broke it wide open. Final point of our 3 points recap, I've discussed defense in point two and then Ryan Anderson in point one, not just his shooting, but the synergies that he has with Chris Paul. For the third and final point, I want to focus more on the guard portion of that and what happened in the second half when the Rockets blew this open. Because in the first half, as we said, it was not a great offensive half for the Rockets. Even though they had 51 points, they kind of struggled to get there, and it took Ryan Anderson shooting really well just to get to that point. Whereas in the second half, you had a lot more attacking all the way around. I think some of it was a tactical adjustment by Mike D'Antoni at the half. The Jazz were overplaying the perimeter, so you had a lot more drives from James Harden getting to the bucket, Chris Paul in terms of his mid-range game. So I think this game shined from the standpoint of Mike D'Antoni at the half, knew exactly what buttons to push. Beyond that, though, I thought it was very encouraging from the standpoint of Chris Paul and James Harden playing together. For James Harden, 29 points, it was, you know, 8 of 19 from the field, actually only had 3 assists. It was not a statement game for James. It wasn't bad by any stretch, but again, 42% from the field, 29 points, only 3 assists. It wasn't one of those games that you'll point to when James Harden is hopefully hoisting the MVP trophy next June, along with the NBA Finals MVP trophy. That's the best case scenario. It was a game for James in which I would guess if you asked James how he played, he'd say C+, B-. You know, it was still better than almost anybody else in the NBA, don't get me wrong, but by his lofty standard, it was not his best. And I think a lot of that has to do, you give credit to the other team. The Jazz are very well coached. They're a good defensive team. And typically those types of teams, they'll take away your first option, what you want to do. And not only did they make it more difficult for James as a shooter, they made it more difficult for James as a distributor because of just how much they overplayed on the perimeter, just how much they tried to close those passing lanes on him. And I think one of the adjustments the Rockets had, it was subtle, and it wasn't night and day, but in the minutes that Chris Paul and James Harden played together, I felt like the ball was in Chris's hands more on Thursday than any other game. And that's interesting because, you know, we've talked a lot about, since Chris Paul's return 8 games ago, by the way, Rockets 8-0 in those games, about the whole idea of one of those guys being out there for 48 minutes. And that means that you have Chris operating with the second unit, sometimes James. But in essence, what we've emphasized is that where the Rockets make their hay in a lot of these games is when it's just one of those two on the floor, because oftentimes you're going against backups, and that's when, you know, like the Sunday game against the Lakers, you just kick it into another gear that the other team with their second unit can't match. And that's what happened early in the second and fourth quarters. And that's interesting, because, and that is half the game, because you're going to have half the game when Chris is out there without James, and half the game when James is out there without Chris. That is interesting. The other half, though, is how are they going to play together? And in the playoffs, that's especially important, because you're probably not going to have a ton of playoffs if you're going into a 7-game series against the Warriors or the Spurs, really good teams like that. So you want to, a lot of folks want to see what's going to happen late in games. How do those two play together? What's going to be the offense in the final 5 or 6 minutes? How do James and Chris trade off, you know, both are point guards, both are ball dominant. Who's going to initiate the offense? How is this going to work together? And we haven't had too, of course, they play together. We haven't had too many what I would consider high leverage situations, because the Rockets have been blowing teams out so much. Again, just a staggering margin of their games in which they've been up double digits in the second half. I believe over 50% of their second half minutes, which is just a ridiculous total. So we haven't really had those high pressure situations with James and Chris just yet. The closest was on opening night in Oakland, but Chris didn't play down the stretch. That was when he was limited by the knee injury. So we didn't get to see too much of how that would work. Even when he didn't play, he was kind of limited as a creator because he didn't get his usual lift on his shots. Thursday was the closest, in my opinion, we've seen to a high-leverage situation with them together. Because, as I said, 51-46 at the half, this was a ball game. The Jazz, even though they were losing, they certainly made a statement, especially early on from a defensive standpoint, that they were not going to let the Rockets have this game easily to do what they wanted to do. So one of the adjustments the Rockets made, I thought that you saw Chris as more of a ball handler in the second half, and you saw James playing more off the ball. And of course, that's reflected in the assist category. Chris had 13, James had 3. So I think that reflects that. And I think also just the style of the game may have called for Chris a little bit more. In the initial second, I was talking about Ryan. One of the things I was mentioning with Chris Paul was the precision on his passes. If the other team is trying to overplay and is tight on the perimeter, just that half second through your pass being incredibly precise, and of course Chris Paul, known as the point god, there's a reason for that. As I said, I would consider Chris Paul an A-plus passer in terms of the execution, the location. I would consider James probably A-minus, B-plus to extend that analogy. And that's no knock on James. He's still really good. But Chris Paul is great. And the execution, that laser-like precision of where those passes are and the fact that there's no wasted motion. If you have a defense that's playing as aggressive as the Jazz were last night, that can be the difference in terms of whether you get a clean look or whether it's contested. And, of course, what that means, whether the shot's going to go in or not. So besides, you know, I'm sure Mike D'Antoni talked about some of that, but I also thought it was encouraging that Chris and James seemed to recognize it on the floor. That for James, it was a night that James is good at attacking the rim, but from three, he didn't quite have it. He was 4 of 12. But more than just the percentages, it was about, it was a game for James to attack, and he got off the ball, and if he could create off the dribble going to the rim, that was great. But from an overall distribution and taking charge of the offense standpoint, maybe it was just, you know, the flow of the game, maybe it's something the Jazz were doing, but for whatever reason, the offense had a little more flow to it when Chris was the primary facilitator last night. And it's not always going to be that way. There are going to be many games where it's James. But for whatever reason, last night was one where it seemed to click a little bit better with Chris as the primary facilitator. So James was more than happy to let Chris be that guy in the second half, and that's when the Rockets pushed this lead out from 5 to 25 in what felt like just a few minutes, and turned it from what felt like a test into a laugher. So I thought it was very encouraging. Certainly, Mike D'Antoni made some adjustments, but I also think it speaks to the selflessness of Chris Paul and James Harden, that they're willing to do whatever it takes to win. And if the other guy is who has it on a given night, or for whatever reason, that's where they're having more success, then James was happy to step back into more of just a scorer role, playing off the ball, and let Chris Paul be the primary initiator. And I think some of that was by design, and I think other parts of it was just the natural flow on the floor and just feeling out what's working on a given night. And so to me, that is a really encouraging sign, because you can draw all of this stuff up on paper, but then it comes down to what's going to happen in practice. How are they going to mesh together? And I thought in this game, again, both of them, the overall stat lines were fine. 29 points for James, 8 of 19 from the field. Chris, 18 points, 13 assists, 9 rebounds. Both were plus 12 in their, James played 35 minutes. Chris played just short of 37. But in addition to all of that, it was just, they seemed to have a really good feel in the second half for what was best to optimize that offense. And then, of course, off the dribble, they took what the Jazz gave them. And against great defenses, that's what you have to do. If they're going to overplay the perimeter, James knew to go to the cup. That's what he's good at. Chris does not have quite the explosion or the height as James. So whereas James is able to go to the cup and finish in traffic, for Chris, it makes more sense to pull up in the mid-range game and, you know, hit that 10 to 12 footer. But both of those guys, they took what the defense gave them. And then more than that, they played off each other really well. And certainly Mike D'Antoni, I'm sure, deserves some credit. I'm guessing they discussed a lot of this at the half. But beyond that, you have to give praise to the players themselves for recognizing how the game was going. And there's no ego with either one of them. It's just about what the team needs to do to win. And based on the adjustments the Rockets made, they're able to take this game from one that looked like a contest in the first half to an absolute laugher by the end of the third quarter. So, all that said, don't know how to wrap it up any better than that. Again, a great feel-good win for the Rockets, 112-101 in Utah, 14 of 15 games for the Rockets, and 8-game winning streak, so I will leave things right there. As always, if you want to follow me on Twitter, you can do so at Ben Dubose, or you can follow this show on Twitter at Locked On Rockets for regular updates. Also, email us, lockedonrockets@gmail.com. Questions, suggestions, advertising inquiries, anything we can do to make this a better program for you, the diehard Rockets fans. Until tomorrow, folks, enjoy the snow in Houston. It still hasn't quite melted yet as I'm chatting with you early on this Friday, so enjoy it while it's here. Enjoy your off day, and then tomorrow night, Rockets in Portland to wrap up the road trip, going for their 9th consecutive win, or what would be their 15th in 16 games. And of course, I'll be talking with you on Twitter during the game, and right after, as always, right here on Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast commentary on your number one seeded Houston Rockets. As always, appreciate you guys for listening, and we'll talk with you again very soon. Have a good weekend.